All right, we'll have to write this date down in Jack's baby book. All right. And Mom wasn't even here. Maybe she was the problem. No, she wasn't the problem. No, she's not the problem. Not at all. All right. The book of Genesis, chapter 40 today. Chapter 40. And we appreciate all the work that goes in with those kids and my folks taking them under their wing along the way. That's a blessing. So the book of Genesis, chapter 40 today. And we are picking up the story of Joseph. And we're getting into in the book of Genesis and the big picture of things. We're going through just starting at the beginning and working our way through here. And Genesis is a book of history showing us a lot of introductory things. We see the beginning of, the beginning of all things, and the beginning of the Jewish nation. And as the story unfolds, we really see that this is His story, not just history. It's God's story, His story, as we're working through, as God is revealing Himself, and as He is establishing His people, the Jewish people, and beginning to work with them. And so right now, we're finally with the story of Joseph, with a guy who's doing it right. We've kind of looked at Abraham, and he was a hero of the faith, but had his own failings. Jacob was a mess, and he finally got some things right after a long time of messing up. And now we see Jacob's son Joseph, who has been sent he's been sold into slavery by his brothers. He's now in bondage in Egypt. Was elevated to a place of leadership by Potiphar, the captain of the guard, of Pharaoh's guard. He was bought there and really was blessed. The Lord was with him. And then last week we had a special group in. So the week before, we read about how Joseph had a run-in with Potiphar's wife, and he had opportunity there to indulge in sin and things, and he rejected it and was very firm about that. Cost him a lot, but it was worth it. Because he said, I cannot sin, not just sin or do something wrong. He says, I can't do this great wickedness, this sin against God. And that's what he saw this that way. He says, I am part of something much bigger than just me in this place. And I can't forfeit all that for this little thing. We learned a lot about temptation. And if we had that perspective, man, that would really help us to pass up temptation if we realized what it actually costs. And so that's great. But Joseph ends up back in prison again. And so that's what happens. And let's look at the end of chapter 39 just to get us back in place. In verse 21 of chapter 39, and then we'll get into our text here. Genesis 39, verse 21 says, But the Lord was with Joseph, he's still with him, and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made to prosper. And we see that God is still prospering Joseph, even in prison. So chapter 40, verse 1, And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers, against the chief of the bakers, and he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard, and into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in ward. And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream, and one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning, and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, Wherefore look ye so sadly today? And they said unto them, Well, we've dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph, and said unto them, In my dream, behold, a vine was before me, and in the vine there were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said unto them, This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days, yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place. And thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he once said on this, he said unto Joseph, I also was in my dream, and behold, I had white baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there was all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh, sort of sweet meats. I thought maybe like donuts or something, but you know, something along those lines, all right? And the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof, the three baskets are 3 days, and yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the bird shall eat thy flesh from off thee. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored unto the chief butler his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hands, but he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. So the story kind of climaxes and then comes right back down again. This morning's message, we're calling it Getting Through the Night. Getting Through the Night. Some of the night seasons in life. I was thinking back a time, I think I was about eight or so years old, and we were going to a family reunion over in Indiana. I think it was in the Indianapolis area, and it's just a very vague memory, but I remember very clearly what happened. There was some relatives there, and this is a family reunion. So as an eight-year-old, these are mostly people that I haven't the foggiest idea who they are. Okay, you're just showing up, and they're there. They're somebody's third cousin, and you don't know who these people are. You're just there, and there's very few kids, and so it's very boring. But one of the relatives had like a camper, like a camping trailer type of thing, and that was the bathroom that we would use. And so, you know, as a kid, that was interesting. So any excuse to go to the bathroom, you know, I was like, oh well, I get to go in this cool trailer. And so I go into the trailer to use the bathroom, and it was one of those, I don't remember how it worked, but you know, trailer bathrooms, the doors and stuff are not as easy as normal things. And I somehow got in that little bathroom and got the door, I managed to get the door closed, and I could not figure out how to get out. And I was trapped. I was trapped in this bathroom. And I was pretty sure that somebody might find me eventually, but I wasn't certain. And I can remember that feeling, being trapped in this bathroom. And I don't remember why, but I remember just sitting there trying not to panic and trying to think about how long it would be, you know, in there. And I actually started, I can very vividly remember, like, spelling my last name, trying to remember who I was, because I knew I was going to be in there for a long time. And I don't know what an eight-year-old is thinking, like how long do you really think you're going to be missing? But I was thinking, this could be years and years. I might forget my identity. I don't know why I'm doing it, but I can remember remembering, okay, Downing, this is how I spell, this is who I am. I can't forget my identity. I can't go crazy. You know, it was probably all of 2 or 3 minutes before somebody came in and opened the door, and I was so relieved or whatever. And so that was my moment of being trapped. But as I thought of that, I'm thinking that's a pretty weak story when I'm sitting here in the presence of Brother Howard, who was trapped in the hole and there. And we have all heard the story, but my goodness, stuck in the hole for 6 or 8 hours. 6 hours, and first anticipating someone's going to come and help, and then realizing no, just anticipating dying. I mean, in a hole, you know, trying to breathe through his nose. And this is a disgusting story, but it's just amazing, like that he's here, and that feeling of being trapped, you know, that feeling of not sure what's going to happen, very helpless things. And sometimes in life we get to a place like that, maybe not literally physically trapped, but going through certain stages of life that you just want it to get over with. I remember as a kid growing up as a teenager thinking, you know, am I ever going to get married? Is that ever going to happen? Is it just going to go on like this forever, you know? And you think, oh yeah, I will. But deep down inside you're thinking, but will I? Will it ever actually happen? Like, no, probably not. We got some guys, you're like, probably never going to happen. No, it will eventually. You know, you wonder, and then you wonder, as you're in high school, am I ever going to get done with school? Is there ever going to be a time where I wake up and I don't have to go to school anymore? You know it's going to happen. I mean, you know, you may be 20 or 30, but you know eventually you'll get out of high school, but you're not sure. And that just goes on. My wife, about every pregnancy that she goes through, there gets to be a time around the 7th or 8th month that she's just like, is this going to ever end? Like, well, of course. I mean, of course it's going to end, but you ladies understand that. You know, you're like, I feel like I'm going to be carrying this child forever. You know, I just want this child out of here. You know, like, I can't do anything about this. I'm really sorry. You know, and then you have the child, and then you think, when do we get rid of the kid? You know, when can we? We're kind of there right now. We're thinking, if these kids, you know, Simon's 6, he's getting close to where he could start to branch out on his own, maybe live on his own. I think Jack's getting real close too. No, they're not. We're never going to get rid of them. That just happens along the way. But there's times in stages of life where you think, am I ever going to get out of this stage? Am I ever going to get through there? You go to the other end, and I've heard folks say, you know, saying, you know what? I'm getting up in years. I'm dealing with aches and pains constantly. And I've talked to people even getting into their very later years saying, I just want to go home. I just want to go on to glory. I just want to be done, you know. And sometimes it feels that way. And it's a very real issue. And sometimes we're at an in-between stage for a long time. And sometimes it seems like a very long time. And you know that God has a plan for your life, and that there's something next. You know that's there. But the current stage is not pleasant, and God doesn't always give us a timeline, does He? To say, here's how long you'll be in this stage. You know, there are some stages that are more definite. High school is a more definite. You know when that's going to end. But there are other stages where you're not sure, and you don't know how long that's going to be. And Joseph is very much in that right now. Joseph has a pretty good sense of what's going on in his life, what's going to happen to a degree, very vaguely. He knows that God's hand is upon him in different things, but right now he's in a very dark place, and where we left him last week, he's right there in the dungeon, and he's really left, in the first few verses of this chapter, he's really left with a pile of shattered dreams, is what it feels like. And I'm not being theatrical, he really is. Joseph was going through a nighttime, we might call it, a nighttime in his life. This is the boy that had been given sort of a revelation from God. This is a unique time in history where the scriptures were not there. And so they were left with hearing from God as God would reveal himself in certain ways. And so Joseph had these dreams as a boy, if you'll remember, where the sheaves of wheat bowed to him and the sun, moon, and stars bowed to him. And he knew that this is not just, you know, I ate too much pizza before bed and I'm having weird dreams. This is something. This is God communicating something. And I think he understood that. That's why he told his brother, said, hey, I've got a revelation from God. He didn't know what it means, but his brothers kind of figured out enough of it to say, well, we're not going to let this happen, you know. And so Joseph had this revelation from God. He'd been rejected by his family, then sold into slavery, and then blessed again. And he'd gone up in the home of Potiphar. Things were great. He reached the top of the ladder as far as a slave could go. In Potiphar's house, he became kind of the manager there, only to be thrown right back down to the bottom again. And now he's in a place he refers to later as a dungeon. It's actually a ward there, and it says in verse 21, he has favor. In verse 21 of chapter 39, he has favor, and he's put there into the ward of the keeper of the prison. Now, if we remember this, the house of the captain of the guard, is Potiphar. And I may be the last person to pick up on this, but as I was looking through this, I never connected the dots here that while Joseph is in prison, he's actually there in Potiphar's home. He'd gone from being the manager of Potiphar's home to being locked in the basement, basically, because he's in the ward of the captain of the guard. Potiphar's the captain of the guard, there could have been more than one, I suppose, but more than likely, Joseph is here in the very home that he was managing, and now he's in this possibly a connected building or something, but it's right there, and he is locked up indefinitely in prison. And he's in trouble because of his good character. Now think about that. Joseph stood up for what was right, And all he had to do is somehow accuse Mrs. Potiphar of what she was doing. I mean, she falsely accused him of raping her, is what he said. He's tried to attack me. All he has to do is go to Potiphar and say, "Master, you know me. I've worked for you for years. You know my character, and you know your wife's character, and you know this isn't me." And there could have possibly been something worked out there, but Joseph didn't. He just took it. He kept his mouth shut, and he gets sent right into the dungeon. And you think about this. You think about where he's at. He's done nothing but right, and now he's right back in a dungeon. And you kind of wonder, what's the point? You wonder if Joseph wondered that. If he's in there thinking, what's the point? Why am I even going through all of this? You ever feel that way, where you do right, you're doing right, and it's like you're being punished for it? We've all experienced that. Maybe you finally surrender to God and you say, "Okay, Lord, my finances are yours. I'm going to start honoring you with my money, like the Bible says. I'm going to tithe. I'm going to start doing this." And you do that in faith, and you say, "Okay, God, you're going to take care of me." And so you do that, and then no big fat checks come in the mail that week like you were hoping. You know, like you say, "Well, I'm honoring God in my finances. He's supposed to take care of me," and now things are even tighter. How's that supposed to work? And sometimes that happens. Sometimes it happens that way. Sometimes you say, "You know what? I'm going to refuse. I'm going to refuse to party with the ungodly crowd, with the people that are living foolish lives and folly. I'm going to refuse to spend time with them because I know it's wrong. I know I need to stand for God. I know I'm going to do that, so I'm going to stand for God, and it'll work out. It'll work out." And then while they're partying, you're over here bored, and it's not like it's frustrating. And maybe you're actually criticized by those people, and maybe you're actually standing alone when everyone else is having fun. And it's like, this isn't how this is supposed to work. I'm doing right. I'm doing what's right. But now not only am I doing right, but I'm weird on top of that. And I'm not having fun, and I'm weird. And so it kind of builds on top of that. Sometimes you serve God faithfully for years and years, and you're the one that gets cancer, or that gets sick, or that suffers because of it. And you think, "God, I've been doing right. How am I? Why am I the one that's getting that?" Or maybe you're in a difficult marriage, and you want to do God's will. You want to get this worked out, and you try, and you say, "Well, if I try, then God will bless me, and it'll all work out." Sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes you're in that place. And there are mind-bending moments where you know God is nudging you in a direction, and you follow him. You say, "Okay, God, I'm going to follow right where you want me to go." And you know you're where you're supposed to be, but everything's not working out. And it's almost like God is nudging you, and you follow him, and you end up in a dungeon of sorts. You end up in a place that's not pleasant at all. It seems like a dead-end road. I can't help but think of David. You think of David. Here's a young teenage boy who's anointed to be the next king of Israel. He loves the Lord. He's following the Lord. He follows his father's instructions to go deliver some stuff to battle. And there he meets Goliath. And he's just kind of having confidence in God. And next thing you know, he's standing in front of Goliath with a strap of leather and a rock. And he's like, "Well, fine, you know, the Lord can do this." And he fights Goliath, and Goliath falls. And David becomes part of Saul's team there, part of Saul's cabinet. That's kind of a popular thing to talk about right now. But that's what he does. David becomes part of Saul's team there, this young man. And everything's great. And then the next thing you know, you find that David is running for his life. And Saul, King Saul, he's a psychotic, almost bipolar type of crazy person who's just out to kill him. I mean, it's just he gives him his daughter, and then he tries to kill him. You know, and so for several chapters, David is running for his life, thinking, "God, you brought me right into this. How is this supposed to happen?" You read some of the Psalms, like what we read this morning, where David said, "The Lord hear thee in the day of trouble." He went through times like that, where God brought him right to a place. And it's like, God, you brought me here. Did you want me to be killed by these things? And you wonder, is this being in God's will? That's what it seemed like. It seems like this is right, but this isn't what I thought about. So Joseph is there. He's there in a dungeon. And while he's there, God gives him some opportunities. That's what I want to look at this morning. He gives him a couple of opportunities while he's in prison. First, immediately, he's given an opportunity to lead. In verse 23 of chapter 39, okay, it says that the keeper of the prison puts Joseph in charge. And then later in verse 4, it mentions again, the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, with these new prisoners. So the keeper of the prison knows that Joseph is a good leader. And so he gives him opportunity to lead. Now, more than likely, this was Potiphar or someone connected to Potiphar who knows Joseph's abilities. And so he knows Joseph's innocence and good character. And so he gives him opportunity. Now, think of this. Joseph, I'm just thinking like a carnal person. Joseph could have just quit. He could have just said, no, I am not helping out in this prison. Like, no, I'm done. I'm quitting God. I'm quitting life. I'm just going to sit here in this dungeon and watch Egyptian cable television until I rot, because I am not going to help out here. And, you know, even to stand up to Potiphar and say, you know what? If you wanted someone with leadership skills, then you shouldn't have fired the best thing that ever happened to you. I am sitting here. I'm not touching anything. He could have done that. He could have had an attitude with Potiphar, couldn't he? I mean, what could he do? He's in prison. I mean, you're going to put me in jail again? I mean, I'm here. You're going to kill me and put me out of my misery? Fine, I'm done. He could have done that. I mean, I guess I'm just thinking like a carnal person, but Joseph could have easily just quit all over. Because what he had put everything into, and it seemed like God had blessed him, and now it's just right back to where it was. Joseph could have just quit. He could have just been done completely. You know what it's like to not have the faith to get out of bed in the morning and just say, you know what, it's not even worth it today. Sometimes it's that way. You say, that's pretty dark, Pastor. Well, that's how it feels sometimes, isn't it? That you wake up and you say, is this even worth it? Is it even worth it to get out of bed and go at this again? If anyone's ever felt that way, I'm sure Joseph did. Because here he is. He's done right. I mean, Joseph's story is a story of extremes. He's been literally sold into slavery by his hated stepbrothers and sent away, and then miraculously given an awesome promotion and opportunity, and then slammed right back into the ground. And then they say, hey, can you help us out a little bit? Really? Really? You're going to ask me to do it? But he does. He steps up. He's given an opportunity to lead. And Joseph forges ahead. That takes a tremendous amount of faith for Joseph to keep going in the bottom of a prison, and he does. Now, we don't know how long this lasted. I don't know how long Joseph was here. There's no dates really given. It's probably several years that Joseph went on. And what's definitely for sure that Joseph didn't know how long. It's not like they said, okay, Joseph, you're going to be here for 5 years. And no, they didn't say. He's just there. As far as he knows, he's there until he rots. And so he's given an opportunity to lead. And he leads. And he actually does very well with it because God is still with him. And so the keeper of the prison, I don't know what he delegates. I don't know what they do in prison. I guess feed people and do work and stuff. And so whatever work they were given, it was put into Joseph's hand. He's managing it. And things are better than they were before Joseph came in. I mean, I don't know how that's possible, but it is. And so things are going great. And then Joseph is given an opportunity to serve. So he's given an opportunity to lead. And then these two men get sent into the prison. There's the butler, the baker, and I don't know what happened to the candlestick maker. He must have been doing fine, and so he didn't get thrown into prison, but the butler and the baker did, and so they get thrown in. It's about 3 nights before Pharaoh's birthday. I guess that would be sort of like the beginning of their year, and so they get thrown into prison, and it says in verse 4 that the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them. So Joseph, as a leader, is not just cracking a whip. He's not just, I'm in charge around here, I will dominate you. No, he's not doing that. His way of leading is managing them. And the way he sees it, he's going to do whatever is best for these men. And these men are discouraged. These men are frustrated. You imagine they were. In their culture, they were in a very high position, and yet now they've been fired. They know that there are probably, on Pharaoh's birthday, there's going to be some festivities taking place. Pharaoh takes inventory of his servants during the beginning of that new year. And so if they are on his bad side, their lives are in jeopardy. And so it's no surprise that in this state, they would have some weird dreams. And they do. They have some interesting dreams. The Word Biblical Commentary, the commentator here says a little bit about their culture. They said the Egyptians shared a belief along with most people of that world at that time. And this was their belief. This isn't true, but this is their belief that sleep puts us in real direct contact with the other world, where not only the dead, but the gods dwell. So dreams are a gift from the gods. Now, we believe that God is God, Jehovah God, is the God, the only God, and so we don't agree with that. But just to help you understand where their mindset was, when these men have dreams that they perceive are something more than just their own mind, when they think that this is something supernatural, they start to get really nervous because that means something important is happening. So these men wake up this morning and they're very discouraged. They're already kind of a sense of doom, not sure what's going to happen here, and now Joseph notices this. Joseph sees them in verse 6. He sees them in the morning, and it says, "And behold, they were sad." And I find that humorous because here's these two guys that have just gotten thrown into jail, and the text says, "Behold," which is like saying, "Oh, look, they're sad." Like, well, of course they're sad. They're in jail. I mean, if I was in jail and someone said, "What's wrong?" Like, duh, I'm in jail. That's not exactly, you know, it isn't exactly party central. This is a very discouraging place. But Joseph picked up on something. He says, something else is going on here, and why are you discouraged? Why is this like this? Now, I just want to point that out because God is getting ready to encourage Joseph. Okay, it doesn't really seem like it here, but that's what God is getting ready to do. And Joseph would have missed it completely if he allowed himself to sink into the same discouragement. Okay, God's going to encourage Joseph. But if he failed to see that, and if he allowed himself to become discouraged as well, and to not take this opportunity to serve others and to lead and to do what he's supposed to do, then he would fail to be encouraged and to be a blessing to others. And so Joseph is given an opportunity to lead, an opportunity to serve, and then finally here, an opportunity to use his gift. So these men say, "We've had a dream," in verse 8, and there's no interpreter. And Joseph is really interested in this. Think about the situation. These two guys have gotten thrown into prison, the only place on the planet at this time where there happens to be a guy that truly has a connection with God as far as interpreting dreams goes. The only guy. Now, there are people that could make up something, but Joseph has a connection to God. Of all the dungeons to be thrown into, they get thrown right into the one where the manager happens to have a connection to Jehovah God and can interpret dreams. At the same time, you have to consider here Joseph's dreams. How did Joseph's dreams turn out? Not really well. I mean, Joseph has had dreams before and sort of figured some things out, and Joseph has a pretty compelling reason not to trust dreams, because there aren't exactly sheaves bowing down to him. There aren't exactly sun, moon, and stars bowing down to Joseph. If we talk to Joseph right now and said, do you have any experience with supernatural dreams? He would say, "Yeah, I have had experience with them. They totally destroyed my life," right? I mean, that's what's happened to Joseph's dreams. You think about it, that's what's happened there along the way. He doesn't know. I mean, yeah, I've had dreams before, but yet he sees these men and he says, "Well, listen, do not interpretations belong to God?" That's what he says in verse 6. He says, verse 8. We're getting there. In verse 8, he says, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." So the men tell him his dreams. We're not going to go through all of them here, but God gives Joseph an interpretation. I don't know how that works because I don't have the gift of interpreting dreams because we have the Bible. I'm so thankful we have the Bible that we can just read it and we're not relying on my memory of the dream I had last night. And you guys should be very grateful that you're not relying on my memory of what God I dreamed about last night, because you could come up with all kinds of weird doctrine that way. We have the Word of God that we can read. But here at this time, that's what they were left with, is God divinely somehow helping them understand this. And God gave Joseph an interpretation. Joseph didn't just make this up. He says, "Oh, I'll bet I know." Three branches, probably 3 days. He didn't just make that up. He knew that this is how this is. And he understood that. He told the butler, Pharaoh's going to lift your head and restore your position. He's going to put you right back in your job. And then he gives him a request. He says, "When you get there, remember where I am. Remember this." And he doesn't indict his brothers or Potiphar's wife. He just says, "I was sold and I'm here because of some injustice." He doesn't go slamming people around. He just says, "There's some crooked things that happened, and that's why I'm here. And just make mention of me." And he just kind of mentions that along the way. Now, there's two ways of looking at that. You could say that Joseph was stepping outside of God's will because he's trying to get out. He's trying to say, "Hey,
Will you get out of here? Put in a good word to Pharaoh for me. Get me out of here because I got to get out of here. I don't want to be here anymore. That could be. And some have said this is kind of a chink in his spiritual armor, that he was kind of a weak moment there. And that could be. I kind of tend to look at it as this is really showing Joseph's faith. Because Joseph is not just saying, you know, you may get out of here. I'm just going to make up an interpretation. You might get out of here. No, he's saying this is going to happen. So much so that when it does, I want to put my life in your hands. Whenever God does what God says he's going to do through your dream, because God told you this, I believe that's going to happen. And when that happens, please put in a good word for me along the way. That could be showing us actually the strong faith of Joseph, that he was trusting that God's interpretation was true. This isn't just a theory like, well, it may or may not come true. I don't really know. I've never actually had one of my dreams come true before. That's true. He never has. He doesn't know that. But he has faith and he's trusting God so much so that he can tell this butler when this happens, because it's going to happen in 3 days. He gives him a time. He's not just making it up. You know, some of these prophecy people, they give convenient things like someday something significant is going to happen to you. And then like you get in a car wreck and you're like, they told me that was going to happen. Like, no, that's, yeah, I'll tell you all today the same thing. That's not how it works. But he says, look, 3 days, this will happen. And when it does, remember me. And then he goes to the baker and he says, Pharaoh's going to lift your head as well, but not just symbolically. It's actually going to be removed from your body. And it's kind of gross, and so that's what happens. And so at the end, in the end, it actually works out exactly as Joseph said. In verse 20, on the third day, Pharaoh's birthday, he makes a feast. He promotes the butler. He hangs the baker. And it happens. Now, this really is an encouragement. It's an encouraging time. It's an encouragement for Joseph. It's not good for the baker, okay? But it's encouraging to Joseph. Now, Joseph sees this happen. This is the interpretation that God has given him. 3 days later, they're promoted. And Joseph's sitting there thinking, that's what God said was going to happen. And now it's happening. So I'm sure Joseph is packing his bags. He's like, we're out of here. This is awesome. God has fulfilled this. This is great. And so he waits a day, and he waits another, and he waits another. And the chapter ends where it says, yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph. And just in case we don't realize what that means, but forgot him. He was forgotten and left in there. Now, question comes to my mind. Was Joseph right then to ask for help? Should he have done that? Did Joseph end up being helped by the butler? Yeah, if you know the story, it took 2 more years. But later, the butler, when at the right moment, when Pharaoh has a strange dream, the butler says, oh, yeah, I know this. And we're going to get into that next week. It's exactly the right time then. But for right now, Joseph is left right here seeing interpretations of God come to pass. You see the encouragement there? You could miss that. And it will be very easy to miss that, because sometimes the encouragement is right under our nose. It's right there, but we won't see it unless we're looking through eyes of faith. In this text, not just one dream, but 2 dreams come true. The interpretations come true exactly as God told Joseph that would happen. God is at work in this dungeon, not to deliver Joseph just yet. That's not happening just yet. But God is using these men to give Joseph some encouragement, to help him realize, I'm with you. I've got a plan here, and I'm going to help you learn to trust me, because I'm going to show you that I have a way, I have a process of allowing this to work out. Now, we might look at Joseph in the dungeon in our flesh and say, wow, I'd want to quit right there. Being in the dungeon, not knowing how long you're going to be there, I'd want to quit all over the place. But really, Joseph's dungeon was the perfect place for him to live out his faith. It was the perfect place for that. So when we look at our life, let's consider this. Your trial that you're going through right now, that you don't know how long is going to last, your trial, or maybe even a dungeon if you really feel it's that bad, your trial is the perfect place to live out your faith. It's the perfect place to live out your faith. I want to show you something over in the book of James. I meant to have you turn there earlier, but the book of James, kind of there towards the back of your Bible, Hebrews, James, James chapter 1. This is a very familiar passage. And the author here, James, is writing to a group of Hebrew Christians. So they've converted from Judaism to Christianity. And he's writing them a letter to encourage them, because these Jewish Christians are facing a lot of persecution. And he's helping them understand, how strong is your faith? How is your faith going to work? So in the book of James chapter 1, James gives a very famous passage here. This is a chapter. In fact, the book of James is often a book that folks will memorize, you know, some verses or chapters. chapters or even the whole book, because it's so rich with encouragement and help. But in the book of James, chapter 1 and verse 2, I want to read you what James says here. He says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations," he says. So you're going to go through diverse. That word diverse means like every shade, every color of temptation. So you're going to go through all kinds of different temptations. And he says, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. Verse 3, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. What he says is, look, you're going to go through some trials. You're going to go through some things that are unpleasant, and that's part of life. It doesn't mean you're being punished for something. It's actually part of a process. And he says, so this trial of your faith being tried, your faith being on trial, why do people go to trial? To prove if something is real or not, or if something is valid or fake or whatever. He says, so your faith is on trial during this difficult time, during this dungeon experience. So that trial, if it goes through, if your faith lasts, then you're going to be developing this thing called patience. You're going to be developing patience through that trial. And why am I going through that? He says, it's part of a process. Verse 4, let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire. That word perfect just means complete. He says, look, you're going through a difficult time because there's an element that there's a spiritual element that you need in your life called patience. And as you work through this, and as you don't quit through your dungeon, as you go through this dungeon, this night moment, then that perfect work will help you become developed and become complete in your walk with God. That's an amazing encouragement in a time of difficulty, that God has a purpose for that. I'm not just throwing that out there saying God has a purpose in everything. No, God has a very specific reason for bringing Joseph through this. Joseph is not getting out of jail free right now. He will later. But right now, he's still there. So why did these guys come in there? To help him learn patience, to help him in his faith, to help him realize God's got this. God's going through this. Do you believe that God is doing something in your life or can bring you through the trial right now? Sometimes we figure things out for God, don't we? We say, oh, I know what God's doing. God's going to do this and this and this. I know how this is going to work out. Sometimes that happens. And sometimes that leads us into areas of even more confusion. Let me give you just a little bit of personal testimony in this. I was about 12 or so years old when I felt the call to ministry. And it's not a hocus pocus thing. It's just an assurance in my life that God wanted to use me in ministry in some way. And at that time, I was pretty certain that I was supposed to be a missionary to China. Okay, now that sounds sensational, but I just really felt like that's what I was supposed to do. So I was like, okay, Lord, that's great. I was 12. I wasn't going to go like that next week or anything, but I was like, okay, let's do that. And so I began thinking that way, that God wants me involved in mission work, thinking about China. Somewhere along the line, I ran across a group of an area of China in the far west, in the Tibet area, these Tibetan Buddhists that were unreached. Nobody was really reaching them. Very difficult group. And one thing led to another, and a door opened up for me to go with a group over to Mongolia, which is just north of China. And guess what? They're all Tibetan Buddhists. And I'm thinking, this is the Lord's leading. This is what I'm supposed to do. And so I went for a couple of times for a couple of months and really learned a lot and said and thought, this is what I'm supposed to do. And so I came back to the States, went to school to get my paramedic license, because I'm thinking if I'm going to be in a third world country, I need to have at least some basic medical knowledge. And so I did that and went to Bible college. I got to Heartland and I was going through in my third year of college. I said, Lord, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. I'm pretty sure I'm going to Mongolia. I started dating Heather, and I told her, I said, look, I'm wanting to go to Mongolia. And she said, that's fine. Like, now you know you got the right woman whenever you say, I'm going to literally to Outer Mongolia. That's where parents send rebellious children. You know, I'm sending you to Outer Mongolia. That's where I'm going. And she's like, okay, that's fine. So I was like, okay. So now her parents even were okay with it. That was a real miracle. Like, we're never going to see her again. Well, you know, it's not that far. There's Facebook. You know, anyway, so that didn't help. But so we're going to go do that. And I said, Lord, you just opened the doors. And you know the story. I didn't go to Mongolia. I ended up going to Ohio.
Amen.
Yeah. It's sort of like Mongolia. No, but just the way that the Lord, I said, Lord, you open a door, and nothing happened. And for a long time, I was kind of there thinking, what's going to happen here in Ohio? Then saying, Lord, did you just bring me on a big, am I just making all this up? I mean, is this just all in my head? And some people would say, yeah, it's all in your head. There's a lot of things in my head, and I will admit there could be weird things happening up there. But I said, Lord, it seems like you've been leading along the way, and then I know I'm supposed to be in Ohio. And then while I was there in Ohio, a couple of years into that, I'm thinking, I really feel like a real strong sense that I'm supposed to pastor someday somewhere, and I don't know how this is going to happen. And what's very funny is I was looking over some old notes for this sermon, and at one point I preached through this to the teenagers in Ohio. And when I did that, I told them, I said, will there be something in my future that pieces more of this together? Well, little did I know that about the time I was preaching, that was about the time that Brother Tom became pastor here. And waiting for a little while, very temporary, for a year, then 2 years, kind of like Joseph in prison, Brother Tom's waiting, come on, what's going to happen here? And I wasn't ready yet, and God wasn't ready yet, and God was bringing things together at just the right time. And I'm just saying that sometimes we figure things out for God. Say, oh, I know how this is going to work. And I can look back now and say, no, I didn't get it wrong, and God didn't get it wrong. God was bringing me through some trials and some tests to see, are you willing to leave your family? To go the furthest place you can go without coming back, Yeah, I'm willing to do that. And as he did say, okay, well, we're not doing that. We're actually going to be going about 40 minutes from where you're at right now. And the Lord brought us to a place where we were able to follow him. He had a plan for that, is what I'm saying. Sometimes we're in a place where we're not sure how this is going to work out. We don't know. And sometimes we figure it out for God, but then it leads to disappointment. That very last verse in our text could be the most disappointing verse in Joseph's life, where it says, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. And sometimes you can read that and say, man, that's where I feel like I am right now. Like God has a plan for me, and then it just sort of quit. I surrendered to do something for God, and then it just sort of stopped. I've been doing great things, and then it just kind of ended along the way. And sometimes that happens. But I'll tell you what, the times that the Lord has directed me to a decision, where I followed the Lord to a decision, it was clear and it was right. Now, the times I made one up, that can't always say that about it. But those in-between times required patience during those silent, dark times. So I wonder, what basement does God have you sitting in right now? What dungeon maybe you feel like you're in an in-between stage of? We have people from different stages of life all over here, and maybe you're in an in-between stage and you feel like man, what's happening? What are you doing with that opportunity right now? That's the question. I can't tell you when you're going to get out. I don't know when the next stage is going to go. Colton, I don't know when you're going to get married, so stop asking me. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know when these things are going to happen, right? So, but what I can say is sometimes it's frustrating when you think you have God's plans figured out and they don't. Instead of deciding God's plans, do what he gives you right now. Do what he gives you right now. There might be some prisoners that show up in your life like this, where they show up and you got an opportunity to serve. And you might be thinking, really? You're going to have me do this again? Really? They need another Sunday school teacher? I'm ready to do something else. Really? There's an opportunity to do this? Pastor, I'm sick and tired of doing this over and over and over. And you may be at a place where it's like, really? But what God gives you right now may be just faithfully coming to church, being a part of what God is doing here, faithfully giving to missions. It may mean it's time to stop playing games in your little area and start doing the little thing that God has been on you for years about, and get that area fixed. And that may be that thing in your life right now, in your little dungeon area, that you're looking around and you're like, there's only one thing in this dungeon for me to work on, and I don't want to work on it. You ever feel that way, where it's like God has put you in a white room with one thing to work on? You're like, God, I don't know what you want me to work on. And God's like, it's right here. It's that issue that I've been on you for years. You're like, I can't see anything. And sometimes God has to put us in that place so we can say, okay, I'm going to do it. You want me to interpret dreams? Really, God? Of all the things for God to put in Joseph's life, he's like, yeah, I don't have a good relationship with dreams. Joseph could have said that. He's like, I kind of had a bad childhood experience with dreams. It literally, I'm not making it like Joseph's brothers tried to kill him and sold him as a slave because of dreams. And then these guys come up and say, you ever do dreams? Like, oh, yes. Yes, and he was willing to follow God. And that Joseph learned how to live in that present moment. His life was put into this moment where he was willing to live for others. And so instead of deciding God's plans for him or working it out in your mind, sometimes you just need to do, and I just need to do what God has right in front of you right now to serve him, to serve others, to be a blessing along the way. A trial, a dungeon, it's actually the perfect place to work on your faith. Sometimes you want to quit, but it's actually the place where God has you right now to develop patience in your life so he can work a perfect work in your life. I can't believe how well this goes along with tonight's sermon, which I'm not going to preach. I'm done. But tonight we're going to be looking at these processes that God puts us through at times. God is so good and so sovereign to put us through things sometimes that we don't understand how it's going to work. And of course, it's hard for us to get out of the story. We know what's going to happen to Joseph. I mean, in my Bible, we're like a quarter of an inch away to where Joseph is going to show up in Pharaoh's court and become like the vice king of the world. You know, I mean, it's going to happen. But Joseph doesn't know that. He's ready. He's just going along, doing exactly what God has him right now. And that dungeon for Joseph, it's depressing. He wanted out of there, but it was the perfect place. It's where he needed to be in order to work patience in his life. And God has us learning exactly the same thing as well. Let's stand as we close out this morning. Dear Heavenly